Welcome back, Badgers. as you can see, a lot of you will be listening to this on your usual channels, your Spotify and your Apple Music, but the Badgers have decided to dip their toe into the world of Sam, what do we call this?
I don't know, but potentially some people can see us, which is a terrible idea, realistically. But we've been encouraged to do a vodcast, would that be?
Yeah, that's maybe the technical term for it, yeah. So I'm going to apologise.
So you can see us.
Yeah, for my Roman nose, my grey hair, my wrinkles, big ears.
Bledge, you look beautiful. You look like you've been out on the links, in the sun and the wind and the rain, where you belong.
Golfer's tan. But as I was thinking earlier, I used to listen to Chris Moyle's Breakfast Show for years, and I knew what Chris Moyle's looked like, but never any of his team. Always just listened to their voices, so it was always interesting. So for those of you guys that listen to us and have never seen us, I'm James Pledge, and this is
Sam Cooper. Sorry that we're such disappointments, the pair of us. We should have stuck to the face for radio motif that we've been running with.
Well, it's a greenkeeping architecture podcast. It's not fashion or beauty, so we'll get away with it. But we've taken on a producer Harriet. So we're hoping to take our audio visual to the next level, Sam.
Yeah, Mrs. C has decided that we should be dragged kicking and screaming into the pun intended. Kicking and screaming into a respectable world of being able to, I don't know, see us, be able to hear us that little bit better. So hopefully you will. And the fact that we're actually doing this remotely, even though Ledge is about a 15-minute walk in that direction, means that we can actually get on some better guests from further afield and increase the regularity, which is something we always talk about and never quite follow through with on this episode, on this podcast. But in fairness, Bledge has other commitments in the run-up to a big week in July.
And we could also remark on your visual is spectacular, Sam. I've got to say, your flower arrangement and the quality of the camera. Your lovely camera versus my...
I don't know whether it's a good idea. I don't know whether it's a good idea, me having a higher resolution image.
No, it looks cool. It looks really cool. And one day I will follow suit and I'll get a better backdrop than this. So to let people know where we are, we're in my office in the Badger Den. And this behind me is the whiteboard where we put all the jobs, and we have like magnets and stuff that we move about for whatever people's jobs are. So that's why it looks quite weird behind me. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah, that's the nerve center now, isn't it, Bledge? Two weeks today we're recording this. We're recording this Thursday, the 6th of July. And in two weeks' time, you will be right in the thick of the action.
It'll be the first day scores will be in. We'll be able to see how the course was played, and I'm really looking forward to it. We've had guys coming doing their practice rounds now. It's very quiet. I mean, you're only talking a couple of guys a day. So, I mean, how many competitors are in the Open? 150 or something like that? I'm not sure. It'll be heaving this time next week, you know.
Why don't you give everyone listening a little flavour of what it's looking like at Hoylake at the moment, Bledge? Because as of the 2nd of July, Sunday the 2nd of July, that was the last time that members were playing the golf course. Before that, we'd been on mats for a few months across the course. And was it the week before when visitors were stopping?
Yes, it was two weeks before the members, 2 weeks without. So it was 2 weeks of members, guests before that. I mean, going from May and June, no rain, absolutely no rain. We were putting a lot of water on to keep the fairways, we'll keep all the surfaces healthy. So it was fairly green, but with any irrigation system, you just could not keep up with it. We were losing 7 millimetres a day through evapotranspiration, and you could only realistically put back two. The fairways were getting watered 4 mil every two nights, so an average at two. So, I mean, that's a lot of loss of moisture on the ground. And
it was getting firm, wasn't it?
It was far too early.
Yeah.
Far too early, too firm. But luckily, nature always does catch up with you. And we see cycles just now are really extreme dries and extreme wet. And I wouldn't say it's been extreme wet recently, but we've had decent amount of cloud cover. ET's gone right down to 3 from 7, 6, 7. So we've been able to claw the course back, and she's looking green now. You know, it's not that that's not a boast, because you don't want a Lynx course to look green. However, it needs to be healthy for what we've got coming up, a lot of cutting. And it's been such a great decision, such a great move to keep the course healthy with irrigation during this time, because we didn't lose any grass cover. If it browned out too early and then it started raining, the rains came and it tried to come back, a lot of this, you wouldn't get 100% coverage back. You would get areas that would be struggling. So yeah, really, really happy with the way the course is just now.
Is it tricky for you to get that water when it does drop back into the soil, back into the plants and everything, or it's not at risk of becoming hydrophobic or pooling or anything when it was as baked out as it was?
Well, super question. We spray a lot of wetting agents, so the soils are absolutely primed with wetting agent, you know, so they re-wet so fast. Basically, there's enough wetter in there, enough surfactant in there, that when the water comes through, clings to the soil molecule, and it makes best use of it, and then you jump back to life. So,
and is that everywhere? You're doing the fairways. You're doing fairways everything, as well as tees and greens.
Yeah, we have paths as well, paths, tees, greens, surrounds, monthly. So the fairways got done yesterday during the rain, which was nice. And then a little bit of splash of water last night as well. So we're currently, if I look at my irrigation computer, we've used 19,000 cubic out of 28. Going reverse the clock back 3 weeks, I'd actually written a plan out to say, right, well, if we keep going the way we're going, we're going to run out of water, because we're literally putting 500 cubic meters a night on. You know, so if I was to draw a graph, I was basically looking at when, and I've worked out on an Excel sheet just so we could show everyone, because we've got to have plans for these things. We've got to have plans. So, right, okay, we need to think how much we need some water left for restitution, for growing back any areas where if we're going to overseed traffic crossings on fairways, how are we going to grow that back? We're going to might need water for that in September if we're going to go as early as that. Obviously in October you're going to have natural rainfall, but you've got to have that bank and insurance policy in the background. So you might say, we've got 28,000 cube, let's stop watering at 24. Are we going to switch to mains? Are we going to reduce the areas we water? Are we only going to just water greens and tees by hand? So we've had a plan in place. We've stuck to that plan, and luckily Mother Nature's helped us out now. In fact, we get a wee bit of rain every day. The ideal scenario now is we're 14 days away. Give me another 4 days of on-off rain and then stop. And let's get some heat and let's get some wind. That would be ideal. Then we wouldn't water the fairways again. We'd dry them out. The greens, we wouldn't water the greens at all, but they would be moisture metered every day and then checked for this. Keeping them between 15% just now. Keep them at that. Practice days, probably start nipping them down a bit, upping the frequency of all the cutting. There's fertiliser went on the greens 4 weeks ago, so they've got 2 weeks worth of release yet, feeding the greens still keep releasing that prill. So course is looking super, you know, and the biggest, most impressive thing, the bunkers just now are looking unbelievable. We've got Chris Trimbles, who's my first assistant, has been tasked with refurbing all the bunkers, you know. So they're all bowled just now, so the ball runs back to the middle, and now they're all 90 degree kind of thing. So we've taken away the bowl, so they're flat.
Yeah, you want bombed. People... So the RNA want people stuck under the face, or not stuck under the face, but if they're going just in, they want it to be a one-shot penalty.
Exactly. These guys, if they're in the middle of the bunker, then they're getting out every time. Let's see how this works. So this is good, actually, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
so,
that is actually good. So those listening, Bledge is holding up his phone. And actually, for the first time, it's a picture of a bunker. It's a very respectable image he's showing me. And it does look neat. That looks great, mate. So what's he doing to do that? Is it just the sand, or is he smartening up some of the revetting as well? Do you strim in between the revets to sharpen them?
So we dig down to reveal more revetting, because there's 3 or 4 layers and sometimes 5 covered by sand. So we're getting the bunkers are essentially deeper then. Faces get blown. Faces get strimmed, exactly what you say. So any of these layers all get strimmed, and then the tops get edged, and then the lads come afterwards and blow them, and then the bases get smoothed out. And now we just keep raking them every day and let nature kind of pack them down naturally. We shouldn't need to add any sand to them or anything. So, no, they look fantastic. They're really good, and everything else is pretty kind of... All the fairway ropes that were lining, all the ropes had lining the fairways have come in, which so it looks like a golf course now.
Do you think that's made a big difference, Bledge? So just for those who don't know what we're talking about, of course, you know, almost every single member and every single visitor, every single guest abides by the edict of the course manager, Bledge, and the Green Committee to not take trolleys, not take anything into the rough. But there's always going to be the odd one or two who don't. So you've had ropes up lining the edges of the rough areas, haven't you, to keep them protected? When did they go up? So it was October, November?
God, we put them up in October because I did them myself at night. So it was a long, long job. And you know, basically that when people's balls go near them, they take them out and they don't put them back in the right place, and they're all squeezed because of the wind and not being put back probably. So it's looked pretty untidy for quite some time. So it's been amazing actually to see them taken out. But they were worked big time, yeah.
Should we tell them the funny story of the phantom rope snipper?
Yeah, so once we put them up, the ropes were getting cut every night, and we were like, oh, what's... A lot of people thought it was members in protest.
We thought there was a rogue member, didn't we?
We did. We thought it was some male or female going out there at night cutting them. So we were completely... A lot of people were... There were stories going about, oh, I've seen someone running. And I actually chucked some old guy across off the course one night. He was just taking a shortcut home, and I think I probably accused him of cutting the ropes as well. But anyway, we invested in a wildlife camera, and we put it out and then watched it the next morning, and then it was a fox. It was a fox jumping on the rope and chewing it and snipping it. But they stopped. They stopped doing it. There's not been a rope snipped in the fourth for months.
Well, once you'd caught them, Bledge, they knew the game was up.
I know. That was it. So, yeah, unbelievable. Pest, but there you go. I've come round to the foxes here because there's no rabbits in the course, and it's probably because of the foxes. So they're actually my friends because they dig out the odd bunker now and there, we repair it. But rabbit damage is the worst type of damage. There's nothing worse.
Yeah, your enemy's enemies.
It's terrible. But we've had the bunker bins come in this week. So the bunker bins are accommodation for the greenkeepers. There's 23 of them come in.
So how many guys do you have bolstering your team for the week?
Right, so we will have another 30 something. There's 40. This is 13 in my team. So there's 47 in total, which include myself and Alistair Beggs. Who I really don't count ourselves in it really as much because we are just kind of plodding along at the end. And we've got guys coming from... This is actually another benefit of the vodcast. It's my volunteer guide that I've made. So I can actually quickly tell you, let's fly through some of the courses. I made a volunteer guide. It's a brochure that we can see here. That has all my pictures of the staff in it, so everyone knows who's who, where to park, policies, what time we're working at, uniforms. So we're going to quickly fly through the golf courses, Sam.
Please do.
You ready?
Okay.
Royal Dornoch.
Is this an order? That's a good start.
I've just put them in there. But all the spelling's correct, I think.
So Dornoch.
I think I've just noticed I've spelt John McLaughlin with a mach. I think it's a mach.
It is a mach.
Sorry,
I got
John.
In trouble for that. It's because we call him John Mac, M-A-C.
Well, that's right. So then there's my excuse. Right. Tell me, this is the game, played or not played, okay? Royal Dornoch.
Played. One of my favourites.
Parkstone.
No, I've played Broadstone, but not Parkstone.
Wallasey, obviously.
Obviously.
Dumfries and Galloway Golf Club.
No, shameful.
Warrington.
Yes, that was John's old place, wasn't it, Warrington?
Correct, yeah. Lady Bank.
No, haven't played Lady Bank. Is that Grant Frogley?
Beautiful. Yes, Grant Frogley, yep. Sunningdale.
Yes, played Sunningdale.
Southerness.
Many times. Good client of ours, beautiful place.
Royal Burkdale.
Of course. Is that Sean? Is that Sean who's coming?
So we've got Sean and we have Rob Marchbank, his deputy. We've taken the whole management team from Royal Burkdale.
So don't go and play Burkdale the week of the Open.
the staff will be running riot next in 2 weeks' time. So we're Thornhill. Well, we say Fraser Peacock Thornhill, but he's not really, is he?
Well, he's normally marching around Kensington and Chelsea fixing the boilers of the super rich, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. So that's we've got a plumber on site that week. So
very important.
And I would imagine looking at some of the names of these boys here and what they eat, there'll be some blocked toilets. So we're in the right place. Stoneham.
No, I've not been to Stoneham with Matt. I need to get. I'm going down to Southampton kind of way later in the year, actually. So
there you go. I can't wait to go to Stoneham as well. Cabot. Big one, yeah.
Absolutely.
Big boy. Big boy.
These are all just previous guests of our podcast, Bledge.
They are, actually. This is what we do. North Berwick.
North Berwick.
Royal
who's that? Is that Kyle?
Is it Daniel Taylor?
Daniel Taylor, okay.
Daniel Taylor. I've not met Daniel. He's a friend of Alistair Beggs's. And he might have been an RNA scholar. Two guys who are all Cinqports. Hailing. And then we have the open courses, so Royal St George's, Troon, Lytham, Portrush, Burkdale.
Is that Hailing or is that Greg Easton?
It's Graham Roberts.
Okay, it's Graham coming up.
Graham, another friend of the show. Muirfield, Carnoustie, St Andrews. And then the exciting part, which is actually quite like to talk about that, my three apprentices from the apprentice competition. Not sure if we've talked about this, and I don't want to go over old ground if we have.
We should pledge, because I thought that was one of the better things that you've done.
But I don't know if we've talked about it in the podcast, so we might get away with it.
So is that you, remind me, you encourage people to apply and say, what's your favourite hole, what's your favourite band or something? And you
exactly. So I think I had five questions. So it was like the first question, Little Eye, our new hole 17 is called Little Eye. If you were going to rename it, what would you name it and why? Sustainability is a big thing at Royal Liverpool. Can you give me some examples of sustainability at your workplace? I think it was my favourite machine as a youngster. I can always remember it was a Toro 1000 or whatever. Can you tell me what your favourite machine is? Because we were literally looking for, this is an apprentice competition, so I'm going to say, well, you can't be ageist, but I was being ageist because I wanted someone young to win it. I wanted a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid to win it.
But what a great experience. What a thing to put on your CV at that kind of age.
Oh, definitely.
And give you a bit of confidence to meet some proper legends of the industry.
Well, that's the idea, though. I mean, so the last question was it was a bit of fun just to see what they were like. And it was if you were DJing, what song would you ask the DJ to play at our party on the last night of the Open? And so we initially it was for one place, but then we had a couple of call-offs and I thought, well, every time there's a call-off, I'm going to replace it with the best answers from the apprentice competition. So it was on Google Forms. So I sent them the Google Forms, downloaded that, and they filled out the form, and then that got translated onto a spreadsheet automatically. And then I went through and deleted all the names of the clubs and the names of the people, so it was blind. And then I just went purely for the answers. And the guy who won it was Sam Norman from Abbey Hill, which I think is a Burr Hill course, where the part of the Burr Hill group down in London area. and then there's another place came up, so Max Campbell from Prestwick got that spot.
Brilliant.
And then another place came up, and then Greg Compton from King's Lynn got that over in
Norfolk.
North Norfolk, their homeland. But one of the coolest things about Sam Norman getting it was he was on Granada TV. They must have found out about
really?
It, and then they sent along someone to film him switching again and stuff, and they interviewed him. And it was actually on the news, which is brilliant. So no, I met these guys. Can't wait to meet them. And I just think it's going to be so cool that they're going to rub shoulders. I mean, look at the names of these clubs that we've just put out.
Yeah, an eclectic, it's going to be awesome. Eclectic mix, some of the very best and some slightly smaller ones, and that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, I came from a really small golf club, you know, it's not, and I guess that's why I wanted to do this. I was really hell-bent, and I work a lot with bigger education and trying to promote our industry and youngsters. I loved all that kind of stuff. So, in fact, yesterday we had a 40-strong bigger walk. So I get quite a lot of requests, you can imagine, of people wanting to come up and tour the course, and it takes a lot of time. So what I said was, look, if I put it out to bigger and get them to do all the registrations, then we can have a mass gathering, just get them to do their accreditation to get on site, get their high-vis on, and we can show them around. So there was 40 people we capped it at, and there was loads of people, loads more people wanting to come. And it was great. They were all from municipal courses in Manchester, Burnley, Barnsley, Bolton, all these places. Some guys from Delamere, Fairhaven, Lytham. But we split the into three teams, and myself, my first assistant Chris, and my senior greenkeeper irrigation tech Peter took a team each. Great for them boys to do as well. Yeah. Showed them round these more interesting parts of the course. Guys absolutely loved it. Loads of questions asked. We talked about all the products we use and machines we use. Everything we talk about in the podcast. And you checked Twitter last night. You know, you could see all their posting all their pictures. It was really, really nice. And you get a lot from that. It's good. And I actually spent all day with Bigger yesterday doing, I mean, we talk about the media stuff. There's a lot to do. You know, we do, I guess part of this role isn't just being the course manager and looking after the course for the open planet. It's actually, you've got to get involved in the media side of it, because there's a story to tell here. It's a business. We want to promote our golf club to potential visitors coming in. We want to show everyone how great our industry is as well. So it's not just trying to sell tea times, it's about trying to sell careers to people as well. So maybe people, these guys that came yesterday, I mean, when we apply for an assistant's job next, wouldn't it be great if one of them put in for it, you know? I think that's how we got people before.
Do you think that in the industry, if you've only ever worked as a smaller golf course, perhaps one that's less well known, do you think that there'll be people who would be utterly put off when a good opportunity at Royal Liverpool or some of the other great golf courses that you listed before, where the volunteers are coming from, do you think some of them might be put off because they think, oh, well, I've only got experience at such and such a place and I couldn't work as part of that team? But realistically, if, you know, there's probably no reason why they couldn't whatsoever, but they might just not be... Yeah. You know, they might not be brave enough perhaps to do it because they don't back themselves. Do you think that's...
They should be put off. No, they shouldn't. They definitely shouldn't be. And I think things like yesterday would really help them. I would like to think that after yesterday that they would see that we're very approachable people and nothing's kind of beyond you, you know, for stuff like that. It depends what kind of personality you are, I guess. It's all about confidence, about putting in for these jobs. But it doesn't matter a toss what golf club you come from. It's about... primarily how sound a person you are. It's not about your knowledge either. It's about, like, I would take someone from the poorest 9-hole golf club on the planet, but if they were a really good guy or girl and worked hard and got on well with the team, then that's the biggest box he's ticked. You can teach the rest of that, you know. So
yeah, that's
every single person that came on these walks yesterday would be valid for a job here because they made an effort to go and visit another golf course out of work time and ask questions, and that for me means a lot. That would
some initiative, show some passion, shows they want to further their career.
So if a job did come up and then they in the interview they said, oh, I came on that course walk, do you remember speaking to me on that course walk or whatever, then I'd be like, okay, that's you got a big tick against your name.
Yeah,
they would have it's almost like getting your foot in the door. But you've got to do that. You've got to put yourself out there, and you never know what's around the corner for stuff like that, you know. And I think they're bigger opportunities than you actually realise sometimes. And I'm pretty sure Matt Plested told me the other night that Matt Plested at Stoneham told me the other night that he got an opportunity that way from just going on a course walk. Yeah,
how funny.
You can ask him next time he's on the podcast about that. But he definitely said that the other night. But yeah, it was super. The bigger lot loved it, and you'll start to see a lot of stuff coming up on the socials very soon. I was mucking about so much yesterday. I was just being an idiot. I think sometimes when you do a lot of this stuff, I mean, you do go proper Alan Partridge on it.
Well, let's get back to the bunker bins, because we went off a piece talking about where everyone was coming from. So you were saying the bunker bins arrived, and that's to accommodate all of those guys?
Yep. So the guys working at the open courses come for a bit longer, so they get a private one to themselves, and everyone else shares. They all bunk up together, two single beds. You walk into the bunker bin, bed left, bed right, through the back, shower and toilet. Very cozy, but they're only just sleeping there.
So what, it's like a converted, it's like a specially converted porter cabin kind of thing? Porter
cabin, exactly that, yeah. So it's, they're super. I'll do a wee video one night of one of them, but they came in, you know, we've had them all planned where they're going to go. They're all linked up to a sewage system. They go through, is it an immersator or something like that? I don't know, but they're all plumbed in with water.
Macerator.
That's right.
That's why you need Fraser Peacock on site, because that's definitely going to go wrong.
He'll love all that kind of stuff. But honestly, you know, when we talk about Arnie, are absolutely brilliant when it comes to stuff like that. The people they've got working for them, there's not been a bit of trouble with all their experts in the field. When I told them I was what to put the bunker bins in, there's a guy there kind of saying, look, this is what we need to be doing, this is where we need to put them, this is what we'll be bringing in to generate the power, etc. We need to get water from here. So much help given to you, and it takes away so much of the stress. I think you would implode in this job if you had to do every single bit of that yourself. In fact, you wouldn't be able to, because you don't have the expertise in every part of it. But there's enough help here to get you through, and it's actually, so far, touch wood, been enjoyable for that reason. It's fine. So I'm hoping the guys are happy enough. I mean, my mechanics, Luke and Phil, have been staying in the bunker bins already. And very yesterday cool. They worked from six in the morning to 11 at night. All of our machines this week, all of our machines, Royal Liverpool machines, are getting ground. So that's like, what, four fairy mowers have ground this week. Nine hand mowers, three, four triples, all so far this week, and it's only Thursday. So tonight they were going to finish. John Deere have just brought in another fairy mower, so it just came in like at 3 o'clock. They're going to get that ground now. So hard 2 weeks for the mechanics, definitely. Anyway, so shout out to the sponsors. These are all the sponsors in the back of the Aitkins, ICL, Syngenta, John Deere, Toro, Wonder Grip, Barnbrook, Green Tech.
Brilliant. So everyone comes together and everyone pitches in and helps out. That's brilliant.
Yeah, uniform and stuff.
So now that there's no golf pledge, what does that mean for you and your preparation? Does it just make that life, does it make your life significantly easier with what you've got to do to prepare? Or is it purely about resting the golf course, or a bit of both?
So, yeah, so the golf course has got a nice rest. We've been able to get on with our work a lot faster. I mean, you know what it's like when golf's around, it's an absolute nightmare. We've actually been, because we're grinding, we can cut the failures of one machine as opposed to using three that we usually do, so the two can go in. Because if it takes all day to cut fairways, it doesn't matter. But there will be golf next week. This is the thing. I think the people that are not playing in the Scottish Open will be coming down to start to play. We get an email every day saying who's playing the practice rounds, which is super fun to see. Like, a lot of the guys that you've kind of looked up to all your life as a golf nerd or a golf badger, as we are, and you see them out there playing, it's pretty awesome. But it's nice to get feedback from them as well and see what they think, and it's been very positive so far. Whether or not they would tell me if it was negative, I don't know, you know, they probably wouldn't. But it's all coming together nicely. And this weekend we're getting kind of into the place now. We've just been weed picking. I've been out with my knife, pick, pick, pick. Loads of wee weeds springing up everywhere. And picking weeds out of the rough and just kind of sharpening up and getting into the fine detail. Just up in the cutting will be grooming. So next week we'll be doing a lot of, as you can see behind me, spraying tees and paths on Monday with some wetting agent. I think I'm going to put a bit of sulfate ammonia, a little bit of nitrogen on the tees and paths next week, just because we're going to be cutting them a lot. and bunker work, more rolling, start rolling more, more grooming, the green tech groomers we use, just taking that puffiness out of them. I mean, they're set at 0.4 below, so we can might even maybe go down to 0.6, maybe a bit more aggressive. They can take it, no problem. Yeah, and just working on speeds. Speeds and firmness will only come if it stops raining.
Yeah.
That is a fact.
So speeds, you reckon, what, 10.5 feet?
That'll be the goal by the end of the week, yeah. I mean, we were stimping them this morning. They were just, they were over nine. They were sitting about 9'3", 9'4". But they're actually, they putt really well at that speed. I mean, that's a decent speed. I mean, the ball rolls out really well.
It's a complete misconception, I think, especially in Britain, especially on links golf. I think people think that the green should be whatever, 10, 11, 12, because they see the PGA Tour, see golf in America, which is just a completely different animal. And then when they actually put on greens that are 10 feet, they would be amazed at how quick they actually feel. Mm-hmm. No, I think hardly definitely. Anyone puts on, and you don't need to, do you? You don't need to be putting on 11, 12 foot greens. I mean, that's ridiculous for Britain, especially if the wind blows.
I bet your bottom dollar, the average golf course green out there is probably about 8 foot.
Yeah.
I mean, I quite often, in fact, less than that, I don't like stim meters. I absolutely hate stim meters, in fact, but I hate them because they don't tell me what I want to hear. You know, I want to go out there and stimp the green, and then it tell me it's 10 feet every day, but they never do. And I'm like, but how is this not possible? You know, I've done all this work, and then they're still coming out at 8'5" or 8'6". But then at that speed, they still putt really well, especially in the wind. You know, they might be a wee bit slow into the wind, but I mean, Christ, the ball runs on downwind at 8.5 feet still.
We should start a campaign, snap the stimp, you know, because how many of your colleagues pledge across the industry make their lives harder by having to cut the greens at next to nothing to get an arbitrary green speed that's probably too fast for the slope of the green anyway. And then
an hour onto every round for every foot of speed, I heard.
Yeah, it means people play the round slower. It means they have less fun when they're playing the game. It means that they're probably going to end up with a worse composition of the greens because the grass is you want and it can't survive because you're cutting it at, what, next to nothing. I mean, what do you reckon you'd have to cut a normal green at to get it consistently to 11 foot every day, Bletch? I mean,
there's 2.5 mil.
And what can survive at that apart from power?
It just wouldn't work. You could cut our greens at 3.25 for a couple of weeks. I mean, we're 3.75 just now. You can cut them at that a couple of weeks, and they'd be fine. But like, if you need to keep it at all summer, you're not a chance. And then this is when you talk about the sustainability. You're going down to 2.5 mil to maintain them 11 foot speeds. You've got to have more fertilizer because the plant needs fed more. You've got to have more water because it needs watered more because it's so stressed out. And as a result, it's producing more thatch. So then you have to top dress more. Then you've got to scarify more. You've got to hollow core more. I mean, this is just in a nutshell, you know. But we don't really get many gripes about our speeds at Hoylake. And I reckon they'll be 8.5 feet all year.
But that's interesting, isn't it? So you talk about that from a sustainability point of view. And I think a lot of people, when they think of sustainability, think of, you know, the environment and think of the consumption of those resources that you've just talked about, you know, more fertilizers, more water, more sand, all of that kind of stuff, which is arguably finite or at least limited to some degree. But sustainability, I suppose, can also mean it's not sustainable to cut grass at that length for that period of time. Like it will, like you say, it will just won't survive, will it?
You can't carry on for that long. Well, not with it's not with the grass species that we've got beside the sea. I mean, there's the argument that inland, a lot of these big courses, your Celtic Manors, your Wentworths. I mean, Greg Evans, lovely guy, Greg. He always has all these courses that he consults at down around about London way. 2 mil, there's no secret there. He cuts a lot of the greens at 2 mil and has to do all this to be able to achieve that. But I'll tell you what, you're never playing as good a greens as My European tour friend, Stephen Tiley, wanted to play in really fast greens, so I took him down to Ealing, and we played there, and the greens were unbelievable. They were 12 feet maybe even faster, and because he needed to practice for the European tour speeds that he was getting. And you don't get many 12, I mean, it might even be more. I've seen Greg saying that he's been getting 13s and stuff down there. They're flat greens, but they're still absolutely rapid. You touch the ball and it's just gone. But poor greens, and it has to do all that to keep up. You know, you've got to do more aeration, more top dressing, more fertilised. But on the flip side of that, and this is where the argument comes, like, Ealing Golf Club is booming now. People want to go there, can play in there because the greens are fantastic and the whole course is brilliant. You know, they've had some great greenkeepers through there. Wes, it went to Walton Heath afterwards. Sam Evans, it went to North Hants. I mean, these guys have all worked under Greg. And Ryan Besant has just left Fullwell, another course that kind of went from the same blueprint. And turned these clubs into very popular and wealthy clubs, you know, because of that technique, because people want to go and work there. So I can see both sides of it. I never try and get bogged down in the argument. A lot of greenkeepers get really upset about it. But
hang on, that's a golf course of a certain style, though, isn't it? Like, a big thing for me is, you know, okay, maybe you can do that at certain places, and Ealing is only going to be on heavier soils around the London clay kind of part of the world.
Yes.
It's not going to work for a Heathland course on gravelly or sandy or whatever site. And it's definitely not going to work for Lynx courses where, you know, if you say, yes, you can have power and that's going to get a bit fatchy and you're going to have to water it and keep it fed in order to sustain and survive. Well, that's only ever going to be a soft playing surface, isn't it? You're never going to be able to have firmness and that speed. And for me, like, I always... What my little crusade is, everyone knows about the stimp meter, but, you know, no one knows about firmness and what an impact that can make. And with my architecture hat on, firmness is the thing. Look at the US Open a couple of weeks ago. You know, it was soft on the first day at LA Country Club, which I know it got some stick, but I think it's the most magnificent golf course. Architecturally, it's wonderful. And they were all shooting whatever, 62s, 63s. Around LA Country Club on the Thursday when it was soft. And then as soon as it firmed up for the weekend, okay, with the exception of Tommy Fleetwood, they were all around par. And that's on a golf course that's wide open. The fairways are generous. The greens are massive. And those greens must be over 1,000 square meters on average. Well over. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have these little pockets where they can tuck pins. And they struggled to score well around there, because on a firm green, getting close to the pin is very difficult, even for the very best, which is why McIlroy kept ending up 20 feet away or 30 feet away and two putting. It's very difficult to get close.
It's very clever. It's genius. You know, and you're right. I mean, you wouldn't be able to have sustainable grass. Well, very difficult to keep sustainable grasses and clay, you know, that's actually holding a lot of moisture all the time. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in horses for courses. I don't try and get too kind of upset about it. And it's actually really nice. Everywhere's different. And I would enjoy a wee trip down to Ealing as much as I enjoy going elsewhere. I mean, it's nice to kind of to experience these places with super fast, freakishly fast greens when you've never putted on anything like that before, when you're used to. I mean, it's almost double the speed when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you say, you know, what suits Ealing wouldn't suit Hoylake, which wouldn't suit, you know, any other golf course. Everyone, it should be a little bit different.
But we've actually not mentioned the biggest thing about the sustainability is when you're putting so much stress in the plant and you're having to water and fertilise as much, cutting short is actually the disease risk. I mean, fungicides becoming less and less available. I mean, so this is the whole sustainability thing, is the amount of fungicides, preventive fungicides you'd have to spray to kind of keep that plant healthy. That's the difficult thing, and it costs a lot of money. But then you're bringing loads of money in with your green fee income because people want to come and play there. So that's sustainable in its way. But if fungicides are going to get completely banned, then there may have to be a rethink with some of these places. Do they dig their greens up and make them USGA sand greens and then try and have more sustainable grasses? Things all could well evolve, you know, but the fungicide thing is definitely interesting. But that's certainly a talk we've had before with Dan Lightfoot, which is listening back to a previous episode.
Yeah, and Strussy, we talked with him at length, didn't we, having different regulations across Europe and Canada where he is at the moment and Britain.
Can't do anything in a lot of these places, yeah. Mm. Anyway, let's say we've got 15 minutes left in this hour-long episode, so let's move on to yourself, Sam, because I would love to know what you've been up to recently. Last time I seen you, we won our doubles tie.
Oh, yeah, we did, didn't we?
It was quite a remarkable ending, though, Sam.
Oh, God, yeah.
This is what I'm talking about.
Oh, I forgot.
I think our listeners would actually be interested in this.
Okay. All eyes are on Little Eye this Open Championship, aren't they, for the drama that will be created. And drama it did create in our match, didn't it, Bledge? So
it certainly did.
We managed to sneak into that hole, which is the 17th as we play it at the moment. We managed to sneak into that hole one up with two to play. Bledge, you hit a great shot, middle of the green, exactly what all the pros will be dreaming of. And unfortunately, our oppo didn't quite judge the false front well enough, did he? And he rolled back down into the front bunker and just took his hat off and shook hands. He didn't even give his partner the chance. I don't think they backed themselves to. Maybe he was sparing his partner the embarrassment. It's just such a big bunker, isn't it? I don't think people watching.
I know, but I saw an 84-year-old woman get up and down from that bunker, Sam.
Okay. So it is doable.
And there was a Toro camera crew there as well when she did it. So, like, anything can happen on that hole, you know, and that's what's great about it. And I think, yeah, well, nothing happened that night, you know. It happened for us. So we're in the quarterfinals, actually.
Yeah, we live to fight another day, don't we? So that will be after the Open now, of course, which should be something to look forward to once you've got the post-Open blues. But I'll tell you
what you've been up to.
Well, I'll tell you what I did the other day. Day before yesterday, I went over to West Lancs, and I don't mind telling all the listeners out there that I had a tear at the back of my, you know, just prickling my eye when Matthew Jordan, our great friend of ours. So Matthew, I've been at Hoylake since I was 7-8 years old, joined when I was 9, and Matthew was a couple of years younger than me. He was about 7 years old. So between then and many, many, many years later now, my golf evolved to the level where I can partner Bledge to sneak past people in the summer foursomes. But his golf evolved to the level when he was 10 under round West Lancs for 36 holes and qualified to play in the Open Championship at the course he grew up on. And there were a group of us who went over, friends of his for years and years and years. We hoped it would happen. He's done it before. He qualified last year at Fairhaven to play in the Open at St Andrews. No, it wasn't Fairhaven, sorry. It was St Anne's Old Links. So he has come through final qualifying before, and God, he's capable. You know, he's Matthew turned pro off plus 7. He's played in the Walker Cup in 2017, again, at LA Country Club. He's one of the best links golfers in the world, hands down. He's a great golfer in general, but on a windy links course, he is one of the best in the world. And he proved it. You know, he was 10 under for 36 holes, which round West Lancs is some going. And he did it in style. He had one bogey, 11 birdies, and that was enough. He played with Sergio Garcia, played with Jamie Donaldson, and he was the standout in the group. So watching him qualify for the Open has just added another dimension to the week. So we can't wait. We can't wait now to follow Matthew around all week. So that's very exciting.
But one over today, just having a look, one over today at Denmark, but on saying that, it's very, very windy in Denmark today. The scoring was high.
I think he came fourth in that last year. that Himmerland thing.
He's been out a lot practicing, you know. I speak to him a lot on the course. So he's a lovely guy, Matty. And it's going to be great having him at the Open. You know, he'll get a big crowd, big crowd.
Well, every single member of the golf club now will be out watching Matthew. You know, before that, it was, what stand are you going to sit in? Where are you going to go? You know, who are you going to look out for? Well, that's just put all the fat talk to bed. Every single member of Hoylake will be out there following Matthew around, supporting him, because we're such a tight-knit club. Yes, we're hosting the Open Championship, and isn't that brilliant? But the highlight of the week is having a guy who we all know and love playing in the tournament, and that's going to be amazing. So,
does Matty listen to the podcast? Sam?
Probably not. No. So, hopefully not.
Oh, well, wish him good luck anyway.
Yeah, very much so. So yeah, so it's been busy. Went down to your old or next door to your old stomping grounds at the weekend. Was down in Kent. We had a match against Royal St George's, which was wonderful. I love that place. One day I think we should do Deal versus Royal St George's. Hole by hole, and we'll argue the case for, you know, yes. I'd happily play. I don't care who wins that one. They're both great, but I'm guessing.
Do you know, I used to do that in my when I'm trying to get to sleep. I would always say, "What's if I was struggling to sleep? What's the best first hole? Royal St George's versus Deal." And quite often it would come in a draw. Sometimes it would be Deal. Sometimes it was St George's.
So it would change. It would change. Would it one day to the next?
I would say so. Sometimes I kind of preferred other ones, you know. But yeah, we should certainly do that. First versus first, second versus second, and we'll do a tally up special.
Well, we'll come back to that one then. But that was great. So just down there for a few days. And then...
You drink a lot, Sam.
I couldn't possibly comment, Pledge. We did have a very, very sociable match. So we drank the appropriate amount and not a drop more. And then before that, I was up in the northeast of Scotland again. I've been making a few trips up there this year. So I think we've talked about Spey Bay, who have been a new client that we've announced relatively recently. And that's been exciting. So that course has been bought by these Lynx DAO guys who raised a ton of money from a crypto thing, and the plans that we've got up there are very exciting. It's working with Chris Haspel, who's the consulting agronomist leading the growing up there, and essentially it's not quite a whole new golf course, but it's not far off. So next week, just the weekend before the Open, in fact, Mike DeVries, Mike Clayton, Frank Pont, and little old me, the four of us are up there, and we are finalising the third stage of the routing. So we've got, I've done the first two sorts of versions, so where it is at the moment, how we get it to the interim step, and the step beyond that, I've taken care of those. And then once Mike DeVries and Clates have gone and had a look at it, the four of us will all argue the pitch for our favourite proposed holes and green locations, because that course was built completely on rock, really, Pledge. It's so linear, the formations, because it's stone and shingle that this has been washed back rather than sand. And you can imagine an old golf course, all of the greens were built in the dells, you know, all at the bottom of the hills, so that where they could get the water, I suppose, have a better chance of growing grass. And now, with less sort of requirement for that, we're looking at how we can make the design a little more interesting, build new greens, give the incoming course manager there a good chance to, well, he's going to have a good chance of growing grass, because he's going to have good systems and all of the modern irrigation and agronomy that goes with it, that the original guy there 120 years ago wouldn't have had. So that's an exciting project. And
are you going to be stripping any fairways there, Sam? You say about there's gravel underneath, shingle underneath. Are you going to be stripping fairways at all, or just using the original land?
Yeah, using the original land. So messing about with the, you know, the macro topography of the site as little as possible, really, to minimize the restitution work. That said, there is a hell of a lot of gorse. you know, almost a third of the entire site is gorse. So we'll be taking off not all of it, but a lot of it, almost all of it, to be honest, actually. We'll leave some around the edges for screening, but the idea of the course is going to be a reversible course. So you go, you stay on site. One day you arrive and you play the golf course in the forwards direction, and then you stay overnight. It's all about the vibe, all about the hang. You know, they want people going out there with pizzas and whiskey and cigar. It's going to be a fun place to make use of those long evenings that they have in the summer up there in the far northeast of Scotland. So the idea of, in the fullness of time, we hope for there to be a forward playing course. The evening you might play a short course. That's not confirmed, but maybe in the fullness of time that may happen. Maybe there'll be a version of the existing golf course that sort of transforms into a shorter course. And then you stay overnight, and then the following morning you would play the golf course in a reverse direction. And it's the same greens. It's the same golf course. It's the same land, but by being a little clever with the tees and the way we've routed it, you'll be able to feel like you're playing an entirely different golf course. It won't just feel like the same holes played backwards. They will be completely different in their strategy, the clubs you're using.
And that's quite, there's not many reversible golf courses around, is there?
Well, no, of course.
I've never played one.
And not in Britain. So Doak did one a few years ago called The Loop in the States. But of course, the most famous reversible golf course is the most famous golf course in the world.
St. Andrews. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And Tom Simpson, my favourite architect, Tom Simpson, used to write about reversible golf courses 100-odd years ago. And he designed a concept for it. Alistair McKenzie, believe it or not, the original par 3 course at Augusta National was designed to be a reversible golf course. So it's not a new concept. We're not trying to be overly clever or anything. We just think there are so many wonderful, wonderful golf courses in that part of the world, because where it sits, Spey Bay is between the really, really strong Aberdeen courses and the courses of the Highlands. So it's almost directly between Inverness and Aberdeen. So the idea is we want to not necessarily compete with those courses, because how do you compete with Dornoch or Castle Stewart or Nairn, or how do you compete on the other side with Cruden Bay or Royal Aberdeen? You know, these are not just some of the best courses in Scotland, they're some of the best courses in the world. So where the landscape is slightly more restrained at Spey Bay, we want to compete purely on the experience. We want people to go and have a unique experience there and have an unforgettable time and have fun. That's how we've approached the design and how the Lynx style guys really want to have us as a product.
I've got a question, raises his hands in the air, about reversible golf courses. Would you have buggies on these golf courses?
Ideally, no. But it's going to be an American-biased audience who might have the expectations for them. But certainly no cart paths.
Do you know what the most dangerous thing is in the world with a reversible golf course?
We're not going to have many bunkers before you say driving into one of them.
Yeah, exactly that. You driving a links course the wrong way?
Yeah.
Treacherous.
Oh, I can imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, you could kill yourself. 17-foot deal. 10, 12 feet drop down a bunker.
Yeah.
I've seen people see it at the last second and swerve it. So yeah.
And almost roll this, I imagine, if you know.
Just make sure you've done your risk assessment, Sam.
Well, it's a good point. So the bunkering is a very interesting part of that. So I'm a big believer, and I think we may have talked about this before, I'm not the biggest fan of fairway bunkers on links courses. I think the greenside bunkers are... I think greenside bunkers are more important than fairway bunkers. And the reason is the chances of any given golfer playing on the right tees relative to the yardage they drive the ball the chance of getting every single fairway bunker spot on yardage wise on a calm day for the golfer being on the right tees is very slim. And then how often do you play a links course on a calm day? You know, it's negligible. So one day you're probably going to be downwind, the next day it might be into the wind, and from one day to the next, the bunker that you were short of one day, you're probably knocking the ball straight over the top of it the next day. So whilst I'm not
saying... Does that not make it exciting though, because you feel like you're playing a different golf course and that's part of the thrill?
Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm saying is the shot that everyone hits is the approach shot into the green. And if you get those bunkers really tight to the edges of the green, and we've talked about this to death on this podcast, but those will dictate what you're trying to do off the tee for a good player more than a fairway bunker will. You know, a fairway bunker might be in the right place or it might not be in the right place. It's one or the other. And the chances are, statistically, it's probably not going to be in the right place. But if you look at where the pin is on the tee, if you're a good player, if you're Matthew Jordan going around West Lancs trying to get to 10 under par, it's the interaction of the pin position and the greenside bunker that's going to make more impact to those guys than this is the fairway bunkers, which may or may not be in the right place, depending on the wind, depending on whether they're on the right tee and 100 other factors besides. So we're basically... Where it's a really, as I say, you know, Spey Bay is a really, really stony site. There is no sand there at all. So when, and the fact that we're going to be playing it as a reversible, we're basically embracing that concept, making sure the greens are exactly right and defended as best they can be. And it's not like it's going to be boring. It's not like it's going to be wide open. Therefore, you can hit your drive anywhere. Quite the opposite. It's going to be wide and open, but you want to be hitting your drive to a really, really specific place on that wide open space. And that's how the golf course will be particularly interesting, we think.
Cool. So exciting going, looking to kind of watch its progress. I mean, is it going to be, I think we've kind of asked this before as well, is it going to be recorded so we can follow the progress on it? When does the muck start getting shifted? What's the plan?
This year. So I think they're probably going to close down for a bit over the winter, although not confirmed just yet, just working on that one. But the idea will be get the gorse clearance out, build two new greens over the winter. So obviously we're limited on when the gorse can come out because of nesting birds and all of those kind of regulations. So there is one of the two proposed greens to be built this year that we could start before. It doesn't rely on gorse clearance. Then as soon as you're allowed to start taking it away, the area where that second proposed green, which will be for sort of version two, so to speak, that say there are three versions in order to get to our end goal for the design. Version two relies on these two new greens. Version one doesn't. Version one just relies on the gorse coming out and mowing out an old green, which is now in the middle of a fairway, but we're going to get that back as green. So that's quick. That means that by next year, once the gorse has come out and the areas where it was gorse has been replaced by fairway, whether it's immaculate or not, doesn't really matter. You know, as long as it's playable, it means that we'll be able to play a reversible golf course by next year. And then by the time those greens that we have built have been seeded and are ready for play, then the following year we can play that improved version of the reversible. And then that's when... hopefully the following year after that, we'll have the final version, which will, the design hasn't been finished just yet. That will be finalized once the four of us have been up there in July. So it's exciting.
And CDP, you guys project manage the whole thing as well, or is that done by like the Secretary of SPE?
No, we'll spend a lot of time up there. So, that's very much how we work. So, Royal Dublin as an example, we did all the bunkers last year. I think Frank and Hendrik spent 80 odd days on site over the course of that project. So I know that's rare for architects to actually spend such a serious amount of time on site, but that's just the way we do it. So I might be getting a little cottage up there, Bledge. You'll have to come and visit me.
Nice. some lovely fishing rivers. I don't know why I said that because I don't fish, but I know that that's a nice area for fishing. Salmon fishing, yeah. Very famous salmon river. Yes, excellent. Well, that's just sort of, we're an hour in. You've got another appointment. I've got to get the kids to bed and then go out and get Jennifer and myself some nice Chinese food.
Oh, wonderful.
From the Full House. It's raining outside, it looks like.
Not again. Yeah. You've had nothing but rain now, Bledge.
I know, it's rained a lot now, thankfully, so all good. But if, I'm off for a salt and pepper chicken, salt and pepper chips, and a Peking chicken.
Very good.
Some chili.
An athlete's dinner just before the championship.
A couple of lager shandies, yep. So, big weekend at work, a lot to do. And I'm sure we'll hopefully see you about at the weekend.
Yeah, good stuff, Bledge. Well, good luck next coming week. And let's catch up again before the championship starts and see if you're fighting fit and ready to go. Very exciting.
Maybe we do our St. George's St. Port's debate during this next week as to get me away from the chat.
Okay.
Of the Open.
Give you a bit of a break. Okay.
It might be quite welcome, to be honest.
Well, prepare to go down.
We can make it heated. We should get drunk during it. 100%.
We're getting a reputation on this podcast, Fledge.
And then start to get like quite nasty towards each other.
That's fine. By the business end.
Disagree. You don't have a nasty bone in your body, Samuel.
Well, the worry is deal finish is pretty strong, so I might have to resort to underhand tactics.
I know. Oh, if you fly in the Royal St. George's flag, I'll fly the dual flag all day long.
Brilliant. Well,
excellent.
Thanks,
no
mate.
No problem. Excellent. Well, excellent. And yeah, fellow golf badgers, thanks for tuning in. And we hope you enjoy the new. We've got a dog down here as well. I don't know if I can turn this and see if we can get a glimpse. Stevie.
Is that Stevie Nicks down there?
Stevie Nicks, and she gets the peace and quiet in here away from Susie from then the house. So, yeah, she's been listening to this crap same as all the listeners.
Yeah,
so.
They've all gone by now, Bledge. Right.
I know.
Enjoy your Chinese.
Au revoir, everyone.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.